people who say something cannot be done should not interrupt those who are doing it. And those who are doing it should persevere in spite of those who say that it can't be done. Success and a nervous breakdown have something in common. The recipe. The recipe that leads one person to success and the recipe that leads another person to a nervous breakdown is often the same. The difference is the successful person persevered. And so they were able to give that little effort, that sometimes maybe a very little effort, that took them beyond the average. And they became successful as a result. Success comes from daily perseverance. In Romans chapter 5, Paul associated perseverance with trouble. Think about it. Why do we say we need perseverance? It is because we've entered into a trying circumstance. Something that troubles us. Something that makes us want to quit. So you need perseverance. So that you will not quit, but that you will keep on keeping on. We don't really need perseverance when everything's going well and there's no challenges or no problems. So perseverance is a good thing, but trouble is often the thing that brings on perseverance. So here in Romans 5, verses 3 and 4, Paul actually says that trouble can be a good thing. Here's what he wrote. We glory in tribulation. Now, did you catch that? The Holy Spirit moved Paul to write in Romans 5:3 that we should glory in tribulation. Now, why is that? Well, Paul continued, knowing, there's something that I know. There's something that I know about tribulation. Knowing that tribulation produces perseverance. And why is perseverance so good? Well, he continued, perseverance produces character. Why is character so good? Well, character, he said, leads to hope. So the end here, the thing that I need is hope. But he said that it often starts with trouble. And then that causes me to be a persevering person and so on with the process. Harriet Beecher Stowe, the author of Uncle Tom's Cabin, said, "Never give up then, for that is just the time, place and time, that the tide will turn." And she's right. When trouble comes, keep working. When a job is difficult, don't just daydream. When I lived in Colorado, I was working for a custom furniture place. We made custom furniture, J.D. Wood Products. And I'm guessing that the boss owner, that one of his friends once said, "Hey, can you give my son a job?" And he said, "Oh, sure, send him on down." So he came. Well, he started out like everyone else does, you know, doing the flunky jobs, the things that aren't quite as exciting and glorious. He had a lot of hand sanding jobs, and he didn't like it. And he would just sit there and he'd sand, and he'd just stare off into space, probably wishing he was somewhere else. And he didn't last there long. Before I moved to Oregon, but after I had graduated from preaching school, one day they needed a substitute in one of the classes that I had taken. So I said, "Sure, I'll go back and teach that one class." And there was one student there who often spoke about Alaska. He wasn't from Alaska, but he had lived there for a long time and really liked it. And he liked especially to go moose hunting there. That's all he ever talked about. It seemed like more than the Lord or the Bible or whatever. And I remember this day when I'm teaching, he sat next to one of the windows and the whole time just stared out the window. And I don't know if he thought, well, Don's too inexperienced, I can't learn anything from this guy anyways. Or if really just, he was just daydreaming. He was hunting moose or spraying insulation in people's attics. That was one of the things he did up there. I don't know. Well, when he graduated from preaching school, he eventually got a job and didn't preach for very long. And that's because perseverance was lacking in these cases. All right, number two. Success comes from persistent activity. Conrad Hilton, the one who started the Hilton Hotels, said, "Success seems to be connected with action. Successful people keep moving. They make mistakes, but they don't quit." The passage Lake read, Proverbs 24, acknowledges that the righteous make mistakes, and sometimes their mistakes are bad enough that they fall. But I want you to notice something carefully about this text. Here's how it begins, Proverbs 24, verse 15. "Do not lie in wait, O wicked man, against the dwelling of the righteous. Do not plunder his resting place." Well, why is that? Because as he's about to show, sometimes the righteous fall. And the wicked are right there ready to jump on the opportunity to take care of or to take advantage of the righteous or to take something that is theirs or whatever. Solomon said, "Now, wicked man, don't you do that. You see the righteous man fall? Don't you go jumping on that opportunity." And here's why. Verse 16. "For a righteous man may fall seven times and rise again. But the wicked shall fall by calamity." Do you understand Solomon's implication in verse 16? Yes, the righteous fall. But in order to have fallen the second time, what does that mean? After he fell the first time, he got back up. And then he fell again. The reason he got up a third time is because he got up from the second time. And so on until you hit seven here. He's not saying that's the limit. But they fall and they get back up. They fall and they get back up. They fall and they get back up. The fall might be a mistake. It might be a sin. Who knows what is going on, but they're falling. They're making mistakes. They're having problems. But because of their persistent activity, they just keep going. They keep going. But he says the wicked are not like that. Micah chapter 7 continues the same theme. Micah 7 verse 8 says, "Do not rejoice over me, my enemy. When I fall, I will rise. When I sit in darkness, the Lord will be a light to me. So you see me stumble and fall, O wicked man? Don't you think that's the end of me? I'll get back up. You see me in some dark times? Don't you rejoice over that either, because the Lord right next to me is my light, and I'll get through this troubling time." I think Abraham Lincoln knew about that. He once said, "Success is going from failure to failure without losing your enthusiasm." Well, we look at him as president, and most people consider him our greatest president ever, or at least one of the greatest. But he was not very successful at business. He was not very successful at trying to run for other elected office. And yet somehow he persevered. When I played high school football, our coaches said something to us that I had never heard before. They said they wanted 110% from us. Well, how can I give 110%? I can only give what I've got. Or I was only giving what I thought I had. I thought I was giving all that I had. And they were just trying to tell me, give that little extra. Or not me, but all of us, our whole team. And in my sophomore year, for William Workman High School in the city of Industry, California, in our sophomore year, we were the first team in our school to go undefeated in football. And by the time we were seniors, we were the first ones to make it to the playoffs. And I think it's just because of many things, but for one thing, they told us, give 110%. Keep going. Number three. Success does not just happen. It comes from perseverance. Think about Thomas Edison. He once said, failure is really a matter of conceit. People don't work hard because in their conceit they imagine they'll succeed without ever making an effort. Most people believe that they'll wake up someday and find themselves rich. Actually, they've got it half right, because eventually they do wake up. And he knew what it took to be successful. You know, in my research this week, I found out that Life magazine named him Man of the Millennium. I thought, wow, that was pretty amazing. You know, he had over 1,093 inventions. He had more patents than anyone in the world, and he received at least one patent per year, every year in a row, for 65 years. And where did he get his genius? Well, people said he was born with it. And that's not what he said. He said, genius is 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. He could see the best in everything. And Romans chapter 8 shows that Christians should also see the good in everything. And that we should not be defeated so easily. Because we have a promise that the world doesn't have. We have something written in Romans chapter 8 that the world, although they don't know this for themselves, they keep persevering and become successful at whatever they're trying. Can we not at least do the same? And indeed, should we not be doing even more? Because as Paul wrote in Romans 8 and verse 28, that we know all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to His purpose. Again, let me quote Thomas Edison. He said, if we did all the things we were capable of doing, we would literally astound ourselves. I think he's right. But he wasn't speaking of the church. He was just speaking of humanity. Whether humanity has faith in God or not, whether they even recognize God or not, or whether they live by His principles or not. Well, what about us who say there is a God, we believe in Him, and we live by His principles? Do you think we could astound ourselves? I think we can. But we often limit ourselves in our own thinking. We put conditions on it, or we make excuses, or whatever. I mean, you've probably heard that it took Thomas Edison 10,000 tries. I can't imagine doing that. See, right there, I'm already limiting myself. It took him 10,000 tries to find the right material for the light bulb. And he said again, many of life's failures are people who did not realize how close they were to success when they gave up. Listen to this. He built this world-famous lab in West Orange, New Jersey. There were 14 buildings, and the main building was larger than 3 football fields. Then, in December 1914, it caught on fire. And you know what he said?
Listen to these two quotes. These are amazing to me. One of the first ones that he was reported to have said was, "Kids, go get your mother. She'll never see another fire like this one." And here's the other quote. "I am 67, but not too old to make a fresh start. I've been through a lot of things like this." So he rebuilt and kept working for another 17 years. He said, "I am long on ideas but short on time." And then this one I also found that I thought was interesting. "I would like to live about 300 years. I think I have ideas enough to keep me busy that long." But he only lived to 84. Can you imagine if he was living today with all the things we're doing today? Wow. But in my opinion, we have even greater reason for optimism than he did. Listen to this from Mark chapter 11, where Jesus explains how his disciples have the opportunity for amazing success. And whether, you know, you're talking about spiritual things or secular things, we have something available to us that the world just does not have. Listen, Mark 11, 20-24. Mark wrote this. "Now in the morning, as they passed by, they saw the fig tree dried up from the roots. And Peter, remembering, said to him, 'Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered away.' So Jesus answered and said to them, 'Have faith in God. For assuredly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that those things he says will be done, he will have whatever he says. Therefore, I say to you, whatever things you ask when you pray, believe that you receive them and you will have them.'" You know how we like to approach that passage? Oh, well, he didn't literally mean, say to this mountain, be moved from here to there. Already in our minds, we're starting to break down the scripture. He can't possibly have meant what he said. And so when we go into prayer, we don't have the fullness of faith that we ought to have. I mean, that's the first thing he said in response to Peter's declaration about the withered fig tree. First thing Jesus said was, have faith in God. And when you pray, don't doubt. And then number four. Success is determined by the length of our climbing. Charles Lindbergh said, "Success is not measured by what a man accomplishes, but by the opposition he has encountered and the courage with which he has maintained the struggle against overwhelming odds." Those striving for success give others a reason to oppose them. How many people oppose the lazy man? Now, someone may say, you need to quit being lazy and get to work, but that's about it. We don't fight him like we might the successful man or woman. Why did people oppose Jesus and the apostles? I'll tell you what, in Mark chapter 15, Mark wrote that even Pilate could see why the Jewish leaders had delivered Jesus up to him. Do you remember what it was that Pilate saw? And Mark, moved by the Holy Spirit, gave us the accurate assessment of Pilate in his assessment of the Jewish leaders. Here's what Mark 15:10 says. "For Pilate knew that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy. They envied Jesus. Well, what do you envy in someone? I envy you because you're poor. I envy you because you can't do anything. I envy you because you quit all the time. No. I envy you because you can do something better than me. That's what envy is. And they envied him because he could do something better than them. What was that? He drew the crowds. He was popular. He was well liked. So they saw him as a threat. They saw his success as a threat, and they wanted him dead. A man went to the Washington Monument, and the guide said this: "Ladies and gentlemen, there is currently a 2-hour wait to ride the elevator to the top of the monument." And then the guide paused and kind of whispered, "However, there is no wait should you desire to take the stairs." And that's what success is. There are no elevators to success. It's all a climb. It's going up the stairs, one step at a time. I found a man, I hope I say his name right, Sarasate. He was a Spaniard whom many consider to be the greatest violinist of the 19th century. And one time a critic called him a genius, and his response to that was this: "Genius? For 37 years I've practiced 14 hours a day, and now they call me a genius?" In other words, he's saying there's no elevators to success. I had to climb the stairs, and it was a long climb. Here's something that I found interesting many years ago in Reader's Digest. A man by the name of Harold Stevenson of the University of Michigan did some research, and he did a study, and here's what he said. When we asked mothers from three countries what determined success in school, Japanese mothers gave the strongest rating to the idea that anyone can do well if he studies hard. Chinese mothers were in close agreement. By contrast, American mothers were most likely to attribute success to natural talent. And it's true that we hear that a lot. You know, if you just don't have the talent for it, well, right there we've already said you're not going to do as well. You're going to fail or something. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, Paul, I believe, put it in balance, because it is true that we're all born with certain traits, but it doesn't mean that those things just happen automatically, that all of a sudden, like a force takes over you and does what needs to be done. So listen to Paul's attitude in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 10. He said, "But by the grace of God, I am what I am. And His grace toward me was not in vain, but I labored." God gave me something, but I didn't let it go to waste. Why was Paul, a man who almost seems like single-handedly converted the Mediterranean world? Because he says, "I labored more abundantly than they all. Yet not I, but the grace of God which was with me." So he would say, okay, there's some things given to me, but then I had to do something with it. I read where a woman said, "A year from now, you may wish you had started today." Oh man, have I got projects at home that are like that. I've got projects in my work as a ministry that are like that. In my high school years, I fooled around. I mean, isn't that what school's for, especially high school, to goof off? At least that's what I thought, especially my last 2 years. I suppose the first 2 years I took classes you should take and challenged myself. But in the last 2 years, no way. I was just there to goof off and have a good time with my friends. But now I'm paying for it. I graduated with high school with just a C average, a 2 point something. I don't remember exactly what it was. And then 3 years later, after graduating, I found myself in preaching school. And then all of a sudden, I'm wanting to learn. But the tools I should have gotten in school weren't there. And since that time, I still struggle with things. And it takes me longer to put something together like this sermon here than it should, you know, usually would with someone else. I'd watch other students in preaching school, and they'd put out papers and reports and commentaries we had to write and sermons and so on, and I was just struggling. I'm thinking, how did they get that done so fast? Because they got the tools when they were supposed to have, and now I still struggle. At 51, I'm still struggling to learn some of the basic things. So the idea is get started now. It's a long climb. Success does not come from luck. You know, I think as Christians, we would do well to remove that word from our vocabulary. It's not about luck. It's about perseverance. The Bible, the authority on successful living, never credits success to luck. Have you thought about that? Have you read Hebrews chapter 11? The Hebrew writer gives God's hall of faith. Here's all these people that were successful in all kinds of trying situations. But they were doing something. They didn't just sit back. They persevered through whatever problems they had. Remember, by perseverance, the snail made it to the ark. Or I like this one here, this quotation. Listen to this. Success is a little like wrestling a gorilla. You don't quit when you're tired. You quit when the gorilla is tired. Then you'll be successful. So in other words, it takes 20 years to be an overnight success. I like this poem here that I found. Listen to it. They called it luck. He worked by day and toiled by night. He gave up play and much delight. Dry books he read, new things to learn, and forged ahead, success to earn. He plodded on with faith and pluck, and when he won, they called it luck. The last passage I'd like to give you today is from Ephesians chapter 5, where the Bible tells us to use our time wisely. And you know something? If we don't use our time wisely, we shouldn't be surprised, nor should we complain if we're not successful in life. Ephesians 5, 15 through 17. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Make your life worthwhile. You are the one who can make your life worthwhile. And together, we can make this church grow if we persevere. And I'd like to invite anyone who is not a Christian, who is not a member of this church, to become part of us, to make a huge decision, I realize, a very sobering one, but turn your life around, die to yourself, and live for God. And follow Him, and you'll see the success He brings in your life. And if you have already made that decision, and you're ready to be baptized this morning, we would love to immerse you in the water in the baptistry that's right behind me. Don't worry, I can put up the screen. You know, I mean, we've got things for you to change into. Everything's ready. We just need your decision. Come forward now as we stand and sing.